Possession number 11487, Eric Jones, reel 1 of 6.
I could ask you first of all, Eric, about your background before the war. You know, what part of the country were you living in?
I was born in Lytham, that's Lancashire, and my father was a shipwright. There was a little shipyard at Lytham. My father was a shipwright. I had three brothers and a sister. I went to the local church school until I was 14. I didn't get any... I'm trying to think, it wasn't a school certificate, but any qualifications of any kind. So I left school and I worked for a little while in a chemist's shop as a sort of errand boy, odd job boy about the place. Then I got a job as a dental technician apprentice, and I worked at that until the war. I don't think it had quite started. It was just almost, you know, at that point. And I had a difference of opinion with the dentist, and so I left. And I was at Peace Pledge Union meeting, and I met up with a chap who made draft excluders, and he said, "Oh, well, come and work for me for a while, because you'll have to do something during the war, and so work for me." So I worked for him for a while, and then at a Peace Pledge Union meeting, somebody had told me about the Friends Ambulance Unit being reformed, and so I applied to join the Friends Ambulance Unit. Went for an interview in Manchester. There must have been about 50 of us there, I think. And Paul Cadbury was interviewing people. And he said, they would get in touch. And I went to the fourth camp, which I think was April of 40, that would be.
Before I ask you about that, could I go back into your earlier life, you know, when you were sort of growing up?
Why I was...
Yes, well, it's really... I wonder, you know, were you a religious family?
No, not really. I was... we were all, as children, sent off to the Congregational Sunday School, at that, as it was at that time, now United Reform, of course. And my father was both my mother and father were Anglicans, really, but they had been visited by the minister from the Congregational Church, who would call on anybody and everybody around the town. He was a Scotsman, blind, completely blind, and he used to walk around the town, and they were so attracted to him, his manner and his sort of general, the way he sort of talked to them, that they sent us to the Congregational Church. And I never remember my father going to church at all. My mother would occasionally, but I never remember. My father was a very moral sort of person. He was a trade unionist. He was a socialist. He came from a liberal background, really. He came from Birkenhead, and he worked in this little shipyard. And because of his strong trade union views, he was sacked from that yard. And for some time, we as a family, I suppose, my parents struggled quite a bit. He went round door to door selling soap, and one time he chopped firewood up and went round selling firewood. But eventually, he got himself a job as a joiner then, relative to the shipwright work, it was, you know, similar sort of work, and things began to improve. But as a child, he used to talk to us about tribunals in the First World War when he was a trade union representative on the tribunal. And it was funny, he took this quite strong line, really, on pacifism, like when I was young. But when the war came, he changed completely then, you see. I mean, he couldn't accept, he thought Hitler was, you know, completely beyond the pale and that something had to be done about it, you see. And he didn't in any way try to put me off joining the FAU. I think he was pretty good. My other brothers were, my oldest brother was not fit enough to go in the forces. He'd had a number of accidents, car accidents. The next brother was, he was in the signals. And my other brother was, the one just a bit older than me, was working in Leyland Motors producing tanks. So I was the only one who became a pacifist.
Looking back, can you remember when you were aware that you had these feelings?
Oh, quite youngish, I suppose, really. Sort of under the age of 15, I suppose. There was, you know, just by sheer coincidence, was the Italians in Ethiopia, for one thing, you see. War seemed to me so positively dreadful a thing that people shouldn't take part in it. I mean, they should... the consequences of it, I didn't think that out until I was a bit older, and I thought, well, what do we do? Like, what if you take an absolute pacifist position and your country's overrun, how do you come off on this? And I thought, well, I think there's no choice about it. You had to somebody at some point in the world had to say, enough is enough, and it had to stop. And until people were prepared to do that in sufficient numbers, well, then wars would go on and on continuously, you see. And so I felt that I had to take the absolute position. Absolute in that I would not join the forces, and yet I ended up by working with an army medical unit. But I always had that feeling of the independence of I had made that decision. I was not drafted into it. I was not compelled to do it.
This attitude of yours, you know, at this very young age, do you relate it, or did you at all, with religious belief? You know, the teachings
of
St. Christ.
Yes, so I did. Yes.
Was there anything in particular that you felt the Bible taught?
I just felt that that as a Christian, if I claimed to be a Christian, and that I couldn't in any way take another life. When I'd made the decision to join, of course, I got people throwing this thing about, you know, like everybody had it thrown at them. Well, what if a German is coming to rape your sister or something like that, you see? And what do you do about it? Well, of course, you were like, I suppose you would feel like you killed the man in stopping it, but then you don't plan it all. You don't create these sort of conditions. You don't say that I am going to do this. I'm going to take a life. Whereas in the army, you have to make that decision that if you're handed a gun, you've got to use it. There's no point in not doing that. I mean, that's the obvious the outcome of joining the forces.
The other thing which was interesting, you know, talking about your father's role in World War One, and you obviously picked up information about World War One, did you?
Yes, I did. He talked about people, the tribunal was, of course, was where people were being called up from essential services, like sort of working in shipyards and things like that, and he had to go and try and make the case to say that they should not be called up. But I think he faced up to pacifism then. But when he got, as he got as the war came, I think the Spanish Civil War upset him a lot, because that was a case of, I mean, as a socialist, he was obviously very interested to see that they didn't lose there, you see. But then after that, he began to sort of think that, well, pacifism just wouldn't work. At the same time, I think he was quite pleased that was pacifist, you know, it was sort of contradiction of things, really. But I think he was quite happy to think that one of his sons had decided to be a pacifist.
Did you read anything as well, you know, as a lad, about World War One? Any of the books?
Not a great amount. No, I remember being very moved by Gallant's "Shall Our Children Live or Die?" That I read that, and that seemed to me to be, in a remarkably good vision of the future. You see, I didn't read any. I read Peace Pledge, Peace News, you know.
Do you remember the Dick Shepherd and his letter?
Yes. But that was, I can't remember when that was now. What year would that be?
Was it 1936?
Was it? Yes, I remember that. And I had the sort of feeling that here was a chap who should be followed. I thought Dick Shepherd was great, you know, he was really... But...
Did you ever hear him?
Only on the radio, you know. They used to do quite a number of Sunday night services. Never heard him personally.
And did you sign the peace pledge yourself?
Yes. But... there were very, very few people in Leatham who were interested. Very, very few. I remember when I actually registered, I went to the Labour Exchange to register, and my number was 2. There was somebody before me, and I never could find out who that chap was. I was very curious about who he could be. But it was rather funny going into register, because Leatham is a very small town. It's Leatham St Anne. There's a population of the whole area is only about 13,000. And I went into the Labour Exchange to register, and crowds of fellows there I knew, and none of them knew I was a pacifist. And I went up to the counter in my turn, and I said, I'd like to register as a conscientious objector. And I was most surprised at the treatment. It was almost like sort of 4-star treatment. They said, oh, come this way, please. And they took me into a little office alongside and took the details down there. I think it was very sensible in that they weren't going to have any trouble outside from other folk. But that always amused me, and especially CO2. I couldn't for the life of me think who the other one was, but...
Did you, you know, suffer any hostility?
Never in Leatham. The only hurtful thing was that after the war, this was at home, when my friend who joined the Navy was very quickly killed on a minesweeper, and I'd grown up with him from a tiny tot, you know, and we played together, we did everything together. And then after the war, I used to send his mother a Christmas card. His father had died. I used to send her a Christmas card. And then after the war, I met her, And I said, hello. And she said, you are lucky, aren't you? And I said, well, what do you mean? She said, well, some folk have come home, haven't they? Others haven't. And she just walked away, you see. But about 2 months later, her eldest daughter came to me and apologized. But I had some hostility in hospitals I worked in. I worked at Arlesey in Bedfordshire, and a number of soldiers there, and some of them were pretty hostile. The things are said to you as you're walking through a ward, you see, you know, sort of, not so much said to you personally, but said to the other chap in the next bed, you see. But I don't ever remember any
Was that hurtful, you know? That
it was, yes, because I'd followed up, you see, when I was in Ethiopia, I always felt a bit guilty about being away from the war, because I never wished to have a particularly comfortable life of it. And although Ethiopia was, in many ways, was very uncomfortable and very unhealthy. I mean, I got malaria when I was there, but and very lonely and very depressing in many ways. I applied to go to the Middle East, and because I felt I was dodging the war and I shouldn't be dodging it. So I applied to go to the Middle East, and eventually I went up to Cairo and was sent on to Italy to join a blood transfusion unit in Italy.
Yes, I'll ask you about that.
I felt happier when that was over, but that was sort of relative to this business in the hospitals, that sort of feeling that, well, these chaps, they weren't wounded, by the way. They were not wounded soldiers. The fellows who were ill, you know, various things, or in for operations, you see. It wasn't as though I'd come across chaps. In actual fact, I found the soldiers who were fighting were more friendly to us than those who were in the base camps, you see.
Were you worried, though, you know, about being thought a coward?
Yes. I always remember my own minister at the church writing, I can't remember who he wrote to, but I remember the letter said that he is the better type of conchie. Sort of, so exactly what you mean by that, I don't know. I don't think he was very impressed with me, actually, because he was, there was no pacifism in him at all. He'd been a padre in the First War and been decorated for taking over a machine gun position when the chap who was shooting the gun had been killed, you see. So he was not... He didn't react too well to me, really.
This decision to be a CO, was that sort of straightforward, or did you have to agonise about it?
I thought about it for a long time, really, because there were a group of lads there, about, would be five, six of us, all... pretty well doing everything together, you know, football together and cricket together and going out, the pictures together, and none of them were at all interested, you see. They all joined up, in the Army and Navy, and I think one was in the Air Force. But it was difficult to be out on a limb, you know, to be different from them.
How did they react, you know, to your attitude?
All right, I think. I don't ever remember any. The one who I was saying about his mother, he defended me. I forgot. On one occasion, when I mentioned to somebody I was going to be a CO, this chap reacted as so many. I'd forgotten about this. He reacted rather, you know, aggressively. And my friend, the one who was killed, defended me. He said, it's his choice, it's his right. He can, I mean, if he wants to be. For goodness sake, leave him alone. He's quite free to make that decision. And the other chap shut up then.
Because that age, you know, group pressure is very important, isn't it?
It's difficult, yes. It's not easy to go against the grain of thing. And the run of... if everybody's going in that direction, you feel as though you ought to go with them. And it was difficult. Actually, looking back, it's a long time ago, of course. But when I think back, it was not a happy time, because the others were going off to the forces, and I went off on my own to this unknown thing, the Friends Ambulance Unit.
Yeah. Did you have anyone to go to, you know, to ask for advice about registering for a CO? You know, were you aware of all the provisions for COs?
Mm, mm.
How did you find? Was that the Peace Pledge
yes,
Union?
Yes. Mm.
Were they supportive?
They were, yes. Yeah. They were very supportive, and they would have supported me at a tribunal. I was in. I registered in Lytham, and PP used to meet in Blackpool at the Friends Meeting House in Blackpool, and I used to go up there each week. And they used to discuss it with us. You know, some of them were quite old. Some had been in the First World War. Some had been pacifists in the First World War. Some had been in the forces in the First World War as well. And they used to discuss it with the younger ones, and they used to tell us, you know, the routine. They would say that when we come to your tribunal, but we will. They'll support you there, you see. But I eventually went to a tribunal in Birmingham, and this was rather disappointing, really, because it was, you didn't have to make much case out in Birmingham. It was very largely like a rubber stamping sort of process, especially if you were, I should say, it was being in the FAU. They would... I remember going to the tribunal, and they asked very little of me, and said, they asked, you know, my reason. They got that I'd written it all down, of course, and just went through it, and then they said, you're a member of the Friends Ambulance Unit now, are you? And then they turned to the, I can't remember his name now, the fellow who was in the camp with us, who was in charge of that camp in Birmingham, and can you use this fellow in the Friends Ambulance Unit, you see? And he said yes, and he said, they said he's a dental technician. Will you be able to use him as a dental technician? And they said, we would presume so, and that was it. And...
did you feel cheated?
I did, yes. And some fellows actually wouldn't accept it. They said no. They said there's one fellow went to prison, I think, three times on the strength of that before he did come back into the FAU. He joined the unit, and then but he wouldn't accept their guy, and just I think he just got up and walked out. He said, no, this isn't right. You can't just make these conditions at the FAU. And the FAU did actually protest to that tribunal, saying that you can't direct people to come to us to join.
Hear about the FAU in the first place.
Peace Pledge Union meeting in Blackpool. I presume, I can't remember now who told me about it, but I presume it must have been, it was held in the Friends Meeting House, and almost certainly one of the Quakers I had mentioned it. And Paul Cadbury had, I think he'd written to the Friend, you know, the Quaker weekly magazine, saying that he had intended reforming the unit, and, you know, what support would he get for it, see? I think somebody must have mentioned that to me. And so they must have, because they gave me the address as to where to write to, you see.
Did the fact that it was a sort of unit, an organisation, was that sort of appealing to a young chap of 19, 20?
Yeah, and I don't know how I got the history of it, but somebody must have told me about it in the First War and what was done. And I felt here was a chance to not be in the forces, but to take part by helping in some way or other. I didn't want to be felt that I was completely out of it. I didn't want to be. I had a friend who was an absolutist who never did anything. He just carried on with his job. He got complete exemption and carried on with his job. He was a Quaker, but I couldn't have done that, I don't think. I think my conscience would have worried me about living a normal, virtually a normal life, while other people were having a pretty rough time of it. I don't say everybody, I know, because my brother-in-law, who was a captain in the service corps, was in West Africa and had a wonderful time of it. I think he enjoyed it all. It was a great war, as far as he was concerned. But you had the knowledge that the majority of fellows in the forces were going to have a very rough time of it.
So could I ask you then, well, perhaps about the tribunal, at Birmingham. It would seem, as you have described so well, that to you it appeared like a rubber...
It was rubber stamp. Join the Friends Ambulance Unit and that's it, you see. Mm-hmm. And I think at that tribunal, I think there were four of us from the camp that went. We were camped on Cadbury property just outside Birmingham, near Bourneville. And I think that morning four of us went, and it was just, almost da-da-da-da-da, in a sort of no serious investigation of our beliefs. Rather casual about it all. It did, I suppose if I'd been more bolshy about it, I would have said, this isn't good enough, that you don't know what I think, you don't really mean. I would have thought that anybody could have got exemption under those conditions, without any doubt. All they said was, can you use this man in the Friends Ambulance Unit? And that was virtually it. Which seemed very wrong, it didn't seem... It wasn't right for me, it wasn't even right for the country, They hadn't proved that I was a pacifist at all. That could have just been easily somebody dodging military service.
Do you think the fact that they were Quakers, that it was a Quaker, perhaps dominated, is that the wrong word? It was run on the Quaker ethos.
Yes. They assumed... they knew I was a Congregationalist because I'd put it on my application to the... my registration with a Congregationalist. But the fact that I was there with Quakers... That decided that was that was the passport through to being accepted, you see. I think a number of fellows, well, I'm sure a number of fellows felt that as well. We were very grateful that the Friends had reformed this unit. Although it wasn't,
accepted officially by the Society of Friends, but he was, you know, very much supported by them as individuals. But I think if I'd gone under different conditions, I don't know, in Birmingham there may well have been a tendency to accept pacifism because there are quite a lot of friends and a lot of Quakers in the Birmingham area. I know that, I must admit, I was glad that I didn't go to the tribunal in Blackburn. I should have gone to, really, if I hadn't joined the Friends Adams Unit. And the chairman of that tribunal was a a terrible fellow, really. You know, for anybody to get off on any condition at all, very, very lucky there. I think he was a dreadful man. But so I was.